Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Monday morning. Hope everybody's having a good start to your week. Predators are having a good start to their week after the last three games in 4 days. And their head coach, John Hines, is on the line with us. Coach, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you guys?
That was a nice three-game stretch, starting with the Islanders on Thursday and a little home-and-home with St. Louis. 6 points in 4 days. Not bad. How do you feel?
Feel good. You know, I think the team, we found ways to win. I thought the Islander game was excellent. I thought our first game against St. Louis was a real strong battle. And then, you know, last night, I'd say it was probably the most highly competitive game of the three, and we wound up finding a way to win. I thought, you know, our team's coming together with our mental toughness, our focus, our willingness to battle. You know, that drives the tactical things that we're doing, but I think it was a real good step in the right direction for our belief and what it takes to win games and the commitment level it takes to win games, particularly this time of year.
You've now been on the bench for 17 games. What have you learned in those 17 games about your room thus far?
Well, in the beginning, when I first got there, I think obviously when there's a coaching change, usually it's a situation where something's going on, whether the record's not where it needs to be or the locker room's fractured or there's a lack of belief. And, you know, that's not all on the coach that is gone. That's also on the players and the job of the new coach to fix it. And I'd say the biggest thing I've learned is that, you know, we stay with things more. I think our structure, our competitive level throughout the lineup, making key plays at key times, was probably the biggest thing we had to fix. And I think it helps when you put time and effort into it in practice and video, and then you have some success in the games. And I think that's really what's driven our ability to get some results as of late.
Granlund's been here almost exactly right at a year. He came here via the trading deadline last year, and everybody kind of feels, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but there's a lot of people that feel, including myself, that this is the best stretch he's looked. He looks like the guy everybody felt really good about when the Predators acquired him. Why does it seem like, and it looks like, the stats are bearing that he has had his best production on your watch?
You know, he's really been a highly competitive, consistent player, and you know, that's one of the things we're trying to get him and some other guys on our team that are talented to really work at a high level, value attention to detail, value your play away from the puck, and when you don't have the puck, your work ethic to be able to get it back, and that allows you to be able to then access your skill. And he's a smart player, he's a skilled player, but his work ethic, his attention to detail have been extremely high, very consistent, and that's allowing him to access the skill and be able to produce points.
Predators head coach John Hines is on the line with us. The three of us, John, have been around your room all since they've been here, whether it's Roman Josi or it's Rocco Grimaldi and everything in between. So we've seen them in this whole run that they've been in, basically playing 100 games or more a year and a lot of playoff hockey. And they've done a lot. They've had a lot of success. It is interesting that you've come in and talked so much about mentality and attitude and what you have to bring, mental fortitude, what you have to do night in and night out at this level. And I guess for people like us and a lot of these fans that have been in that building every game and seen this group do a whole lot of winning and play some really, really tough hockey and some postseason hockey, how you need to tell them what it takes to do night in and night out. But you've been doing that, and they weren't doing that before you. Now they're back to doing it. You can see it. Well, for people that scratch their head and say, why does John Hines need to tell this group in particular, it's not like a bunch of 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, how to play this game at this level night in and night out?
I think every year is different. And, you know, the positive thing, as you said, is a lot of these guys have been through some wars, some long playoff runs. You know, they do understand what it takes to win. And sometimes when you go through that, it's hard. It's hard to win. It's hard to bring that mentality and that effort night in and night out, year in and year out. And, you know, for whatever reason, I wasn't here. So So I can't necessarily comment on what happened early in the year. I mean, they had an excellent coach that was here before me and had a lot of success. I just think sometimes in sports, you know, they hit some tough times early in the year. And sometimes when you start to lose a little bit, you can get away from things. And sometimes you just, it gets away. It could be some sort of complacency or, you know, to get that mentality to play that the way you need to play. And sometimes when you don't get the results, it can spiral in the wrong direction. And it's not just in hockey or Nashville. I think it happens a lot in pro sports. But the positive thing is we've chipped away at it. It's a high character team. It's a group of players that have been through it before, and you know they are getting back to it. And I think the credit goes to the players. You know, you come in and preach certain things, but they have to have the willingness to do it and the buy-in to do it, and the pride and commitment to win games and play hard for the fans and get ourselves, you know, hopefully back into the playoffs, which is what our goal is. And you know that's what's going on. The good thing is I think we found the problem. The players have committed to it, and hopefully we can continue to play some real strong hockey here down the stretch.
We're talking to John Hines, head coach of the Nashville Predators. And John, I'm curious about just you, as you have now been here, as Darren said, 17 games. What about you and your whole moving down here, getting your roots down here in Nashville? I know that the academic clock is a whole lot different for kids here as opposed to the Northeast where you're from. Getting a place to live, getting your family settled. How has all that been? Has it slowed down at all?
It's slowed down a little bit, just in the sense that I think you're much more comfortable with the hockey side of it. It's just the staff and the players and the city itself. Personally, it's, you know, you kind of know your way around and you're really familiar with people now, and you have some relationships and some investment here. Family-wise, my wife was down last week, so that's you know, we're currently looking for a place to live. I'd like to try to get my family out here, hopefully in April, so the kids can get in school, at least have the last month. And then my daughter's going to be a freshman in high school next year, so she plays fall sports. And I think hopefully if she winds up making one of the teams, I think that starts July 15th. So hopefully we can get everyone down here and get settled in April, let them get into school, meet some people, see the city, have a little bit of a summer to get settled, and then they should be ready to go for next fall.
Well, one thing that I know has been interesting for you as you've watched these guys is one of the strengths of the team is that you have a lot of depth. We've talked so much recently about Nick Bonino's line. In some people's view, that could be viewed as secondary scoring, but there are a ton of guys on this team that on a particular night could make the big play for you. And so balancing that with, you know, when do you ride the top players? That's got to be a challenge, but it's probably a good challenge if everybody's bought in because you have so many different guys who can be really good, productive players for you.
Absolutely. You know, I think the team is well constructed, and you know, coming here, if you're going to be a playoff team and you're going to win over the 82-game season and then make a run in the playoffs, you do have to have depth, and you have to have guys that can contribute at different nights. And I think the other thing it does is it really promotes internal competition, that, you know, there's different skill sets and different roles on the team. But I think with the depth, you can use different players on special teams and make that competitive, who's going to penalty kill, who's going to be on the power play. And then I think night in and night out, it's important for this group, this particular group this year, that the ice time is earned, and you're playing the guys that are going to play the right way. And as we talked about, they have the commitment level that you need to win, the mental toughness and fortitude and preparation that you need to win this time of year. So it's been nice that sense where you've been able to create some internal competition, have some more things based on merit. And I think that's also helped our team. And I think that's also how you build team camaraderie, that, you know, you have to perform at a high level to get A, the ice time or the situations that particular players want to play in. And it helps as a coach when you have depth.
You have a lot of home games coming up here. And yesterday you got to experience, as the Predators coach, a big standing ovation during the TV timeout that the fans are known for. And you could feel the emotion for Pecorine yesterday, the way he was battling and the guys were battling and blocking shots in front of him. What was that like for you? Were you aware of that going on here? Because I know it's a big goal of yours and for the teams to really start playing well at home.
Yeah, it's, you know, I had witnessed it, although on the opposing bench at times. It's, yeah. I mean, it was a fantastic place to play, but it is. It's a different sense of emotion, and I think, pride and energy that it brings to the team, it brings to the coaches. When the fans are like they were yesterday, it energizes the team, and it makes it a tough building to play. And I think, again, like you said, I think you give the players credit to that, that in order for the fans to do that, you have to give them reason to do it. And I think our players, the last two home games, the Islander game, the St. Louis game, we did that. So that's been our objective. It's something that we have talked about, and it's something that we want to continue to have here at home.
Predators head coach John Hines is here with us, and I know this time of year, no matter what, is difficult for a head coach, for a GM to evaluate trade deadline a week away to try and figure out what tweaks you want to make to your team. But is there an added layer of difficulty for you as someone that's still trying to establish a new culture and get these guys playing the right way, that you don't necessarily want to upset the apple cart, but you also want David Poile to try and do what's best for the team to help you guys compete?
Absolutely. I think that's the important thing. I think the coach GM relationship and communication and understanding that, you have to do what's best for the team and you have to do what's best for the organization. And I think that comes to communication and, buy-in and working together from that standpoint. But from the coaching standpoint, when you narrow it down to today and like you said, trying to implement some certain things, whether it's tactically or culturally or mindset wise, we feel like our team is coming back together the way we need it to be. Guys are playing well. There's, I think some better team chemistry going on right now. So you're always concerned about that as a coach when you get into this time of year, because there's certain things that are out of your control as a coach, and but all you can do is control and coach the players that you have.
I've asked some of the players about this, but now getting a chance to talk to you of just how difficult it really is to take over mid-season, not have a ton of practice time, but also try and change, tweak things, however you want to word it. I mean, what has that process been like for you?
Well, it's been, I think experience helps that. And what you do is you come in and you just try to give them little pieces. There were things and are things that were done prior to me being here that are very good. So I think those components you leave alone, you just reinforce it. And then if there's certain slight tweaks tactically that you want to do, I think you implement them slowly. And, and you don't try to cover everything. You just try to pinpoint exactly what you feel is going to be a little bit of your staple and some things that you feel could change tactically. Or even if the tactics weren't the problem, sometimes it's just the mindset that there's something a little bit different, a little bit different verbiage or tactical little things, I think sometimes helps mindset. And then you stay on those components and you try to use your practice time very wisely. You try to make sure that your video sessions and meetings are very pointed and you're not trying to cover everything. You're really just trying to fine tune these particular areas. And that's what we've tried to do. And it also helps when you have a team that's a little bit more veteran. These guys know how to play. They can accept information. This group's been very coachable. And I think that helps when you have the type of players we have here to be able to get it done a little bit on the fly. And I'd say the last probably biggest challenge as the coach is really getting to know the players and the personnel and who you can count on and who you want to play in certain situations. Because that only comes through the game situations and repetition. I think that's probably the biggest challenge of a new coach coming in mid-year.
As somebody that's covered the team for a while, and these guys have as well, and it's very easy for us to identify the leaders on this team. Roman Josi obviously stands out, but a guy that you haven't had on the ice in Ryan Ellis, how big of a help has he been, even though he hasn't been able to play?
Ryan's been excellent. He's I've had the chance to meet with him and get his opinions on our team, on what's going on with our team, what he sees. What's going on in the past. He's a very upfront, straight shooter. He's a really he's into the game. He knows what's going on in the league. He knows players. He's a very hockey perceptive guy. He lives it. He lives the game, and he's been great. He's been working hard to come back. So hopefully we can get him back sometime. It's obviously going to be a big boost to our team, but he's been very beneficial, and he's certainly one of the leaders and guys that I do rely on for his opinions and thoughts on certain things.
Thursday night, as we wrap this up, before they dropped the puck against the Islanders, there were two things that were thrown on the ice. They're fish, catfish. Is that your first experience seeing catfish thrown onto the ice before a hockey game?
That is. The only other place I've seen something like that happen was at Joe Louis back in the day with the Detroit Red Wings with the squid.
Right.
But it's been the first time personally for me being involved in the game that's happened. But it's pretty cool. There's some really good traditions. The atmosphere is fantastic, and that's just another little thing in the Nashville Predators hockey fan base that's exciting.
Did you know anything about that, or did you look around and go, why are there two catfish on the ice? Or were you,
brought in a little bit on the tradition? It didn't happen. Yeah, it didn't happen the first few games I was here.
Yeah.
It just happened the last two. So hopefully they keep doing it because it seems like it's been good luck.
Hey, thanks for the visit. Keep this thing rolling. You're going to spend a lot of time, as we've brought up, at home to close out this month. Only one road game left in the month of February. Thanks for doing this. Good to talk to you.
All right, thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, that is Predators head coach John Hines. And the catfish maybe that's the start of this winning streak. I don't know.
Had one yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, look.
Was it just one?
I saw one yesterday.
Beginning.
Two
on Thursday.
Before the game on Thursday.
Yeah.
Both came from the same neighborhood.
I think right now, the way they're playing at home, going to have to keep that going tomorrow night against Carolina. There needs to be at least one hit the ice.
Hey, don't listen to me. Listen to the coach.
Yeah.
He kind of said it. I don't mind it.
He said it. He said it right there.
Don't
so
mind it.
I think you might see one tomorrow.
All right. We'll come back, continue talking about this team on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from head coach John Hines. Our first chance to talk to him since he's taken over things. 17 games in the books for him. Predators have won three for the first time since October 26 when they went down to Tampa and beat the Lightning. Now, can they do what they did following that game? So that was a three-game winning streak, and they came home and they played the Blackhawks, and they beat Chicago, and so they won four in a row. Can they do that against Carolina? And then they had one more game in the month, and we don't need to relive that. That was the Calgary game. And that's when things went the other way, unfortunately. But can they follow this up and keep this thing rolling, especially at home? And I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to say that to him at the end. Look, they've had some struggles at home. There's no doubt about it. The fans have been leaving early. And if you noticed, on Thursday and yesterday, when you give them something, they'll give it back. I mean, the atmosphere has been fantastic the last two home games. If you give them a reason to stick around, you give them a reason to be loud and proud, they're going to do it. I mean, yesterday was an awesome atmosphere.
It all came from Pecorine. That's where it started. And I think people can appreciate, too, what they're seeing with the grind, right? You see these T-shirts and banners that the team is putting up around the locker room and wearing around. They're trying to get this mentality, embrace the grind. And yesterday, I thought, was a game that the Blues came out and they look like the defending champions. Now, remember, they've been doing everything. They're still leading the Central. They're going through a dip right now. They're fighting through a tough time. They've got now two wins in their last 12 games, 2-7-3. That's very unlike the Blues. And I thought they came out very flat on Saturday, and Nashville came out of the gate flying. Could have been up more than 2-0 at the end of the first period. They almost ran the Blues right out of the building. Blues fought back, but the Predators, I thought, were the better team from start to finish on Saturday. Yesterday was a different story. The Blues came out. They were on their game. What is their game? They grind you. They're big. They're strong. They put the puck in your zone, and they just try to wear you down over the course of the game. And the Predators were really struggling completing passes and moving the puck up the ice. They didn't have the puck sustained in the blue zone at all to speak of in the first two periods when you get down to it. Just a little bit, a flash here, a flash there. Like Forsberg broke free in the first period. That was maybe the only really good chance they had, maybe one or two others. Second period, other than the goal that Smith scored, and maybe Grimaldi hit the crossbar on the one, they just didn't have much sustained attack. The Blues had the puck in the Predator zone constantly. in games like that before this year. There have been a lot of them, and we have pointed them out, and we've had huge discussions the next day. They have buckled, right? Mm-hmm. They have gone through games like that where that score would have ended up 4-1. And everybody would
have
been. To
your point, in the past, they don't win.
Right, and people are in a bad mood, and they start filing out early, and what's going on?
8 minutes to go, they're leaving.
I bet you we could pick out 6 or 7 on home ice that has happened, right? But yesterday was different. They buckled down. They were blocking shots. They defended. They knew they couldn't take their foot off the gas for 1 second. And when the Blues got the chances, because you can't not give up a few chances here and there when a team's got the puck that much. Pekka-Rinne made key saves to keep his team in it, and they never trailed. Like, they were even in the game thanks to Pekka and just great gutsy defending. Then in the third period, they played an even, I thought, a pretty even period. They still took a lot of heat, but I thought that was remarkable. So it builds up. The fans see this, right? Mm-hmm. They appreciate it. They're gutting it out. Standing ovation. They put I thought the game ops did a good thing. They put Pekka-Rinne's face on the Jumbotron. They you know, his name on the banner, seventh man, Rinne, because that was the guy that was driving the energy. It's no secret Pekka has struggled.
He needed that.
That was so big for him, and the fans know it.
Yeah.
That was a good Smashville moment. So now that's the thing. If you can make this we got 6 of the next 7 games for the Predators on home ice. If they can keep building that mentality, you watch the atmosphere in that building. It's going to get back to. It's still not.
Yeah.
Where it has been before.
No, but it's going to get.
But
it's
that was
grow.
A taste of
It'll
it. Yeah,
grow.
It will grow.
But I think too, and look, I think all of us would agree. We'd rather see them come out and play lights out every game, but we know that's not possible.
You can't win like that every night.
You can't win like that every night. I think when you look big picture, a game like last night is exactly what they needed, because Pekka-Rinne needed to be Pekka-Rinne. He needed to be Superman. And he needed one of those games that it's like, it's the old Pekka. It's the Pekka that we've all watched for years. And he won that game for them last night. There's just no other way to put it. Kyle Turris got the game-winning goal, but Pekka-Rinne was the reason that it was 1-1 at that point in the third, because he was standing on his head. But think about what that could do for him the rest of the way. And John Hines is, you know, anytime he's asked about goaltending, and Pekka was asked about it last night, I mean, it's the same answer. We got two goaltenders. We got two starting goaltenders. That's what they have right now.
Well, but that was a back-to-back situation, so they do, but they're also going to have to figure out how to play this out the rest of the, I mean, that's a back-to-back, so you know, one starting one, the other starting the other. So who starts Tuesday?
Okay.
UC Saros.
Probably UC Saros.
That's what I'm asking.
However, if you have a confident Pekka-Rinne as your backup or whatever title you want to put on him, that's a dangerous thing.
I know, but I'm saying that they're not going to have equal splits the rest of the way. So who's going to be the guy? Is it truly just like everybody else? Is it if UC gets back in there Tuesday and they keep winning and they wait till another back-to-back situation before they change it up? Or, I mean, how are they going to ride this out the rest of the way? Right. I'm going to be very curious to see how Hines does
have
that.
Do you have an opinion one way or another right now, or are you still in wait-and-see mode?
With what?
I'm not ready to say UC Saros is the guy.
I think if you look his last 5 starts, he's been the guy.
No, and I understand that. But are you ready to hand the baton over, or is it still just right now? You're riding the hot hand. That's my question.
I agree with Willie. I think tomorrow he goes back to UC Saros.
Well, let me
what
ask,
I think he's going to do.
Let me throw this out there, because
do you understand why I'm asking it that way, though?
I understand.
Look,
your question.
To your point, they definitely need both, but somebody's going to get the bulk of the starts the rest
you're
of the way.
You're waiting for somebody to grab the brass ring, and it's easy to say that Saros has done that, but I'm not ready to say that Pekka has. I mean, I think Pekka's hand is up there, too.
Well, he's had two good starts. He didn't get rewarded for one. His team didn't help him against Vegas. He was really good, and they were not, but he was very good yesterday. But overall, if who's been grabbing it lately, it's been UC Saros. I mean, the numbers bear that out. I mean, what's his save percentage in the last 5 starts? Oh. Like 950? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Six and two.
He's not going to keep that up. But
in the last 8.
It's insane.
Yeah. Well, but these are the numbers that he usually starts getting. If you look year in, year out, this is not every year's the same, but he tends to finish strong. Soros does. Going back to your question,
Chase. See what you did there.
You don't have to decide today. You don't have to name or, you know, grab the baton or any or pass the baton or any of that stuff yet. Now, this is right now. I see it as a good problem. If you have them both playing well, that's something that would be new this year. Let's look at this week. You have the game against Carolina. I would guess that you would go back to Soros here just because he's played so well.
And then you've got back-to-backs.
Then you have back-to-backs. In Chicago is where Pekka-Rinne scored the goal. He played a really good game there. It would seem to me that that's a logical game to go back to Pekka. And then in the back-to-back, you would probably come back with Soros on Saturday. So I think you just take it slow. You don't have to decide anything. The key is to get them both playing as well as they can play. And then you have a very difficult decision on your hands, perhaps, but that's a good thing. That means they've come out of the fire here playing the way they're capable of. We've been talking about it really throughout the season. It's been so glaring to see both of their save percentages under 90 for a long time. Pekka went 8-0-2 to start, and then the numbers since then have not been good up until these last couple starts where have been really encouraging. Throw away the nightmare in Vancouver, because that was a nightmare for the for the whole team. But Soros, really, his numbers have been trending better. He had the awful start, right, where his numbers really looked ugly for about a month or two. But you trace his numbers back to about mid-November, they're starting to look much more UC Soros-like. But I think John Hines said it yesterday. Philip Forsberg really was emphatic with it with you, Chase, in the interview I listened to on the postgame show. He was like, I love our goaltenders. We feel like we have the two best in the league, which, you know, it's a little hyperbole because they're in their locker room, but they feel like when those guys are playing well, that should be the best tandem of goalies or among the best tandems of goalies that anybody has. So I would downplay the whole who's the starter, who's not. But that's going to be something that gets talked about a lot here. But for the next week or two, I think they're both going to play a lot. They have still, what, five or six more back-to-backs left? They have a ton of games here.
They have one more this month, and they have...
March is brutal.
Three in March.
More than that.
And one in April.
Okay, there you go. So one in April. So five
there's
more.
Three in March, and one in April.
And one
or no,
more.
There's four in March.
Yeah.
One,
I was about to say.
Two, because they got a couple Saturday, Sundays.
Oh,
twice.
Well, that's the
three
league.
Times.
That is what starts happening.
Three
in the
times they have Saturday,
the second,
Sundays.
Third, the 14th and 15th, the 21st and 22nd, and the 28th and 29th.
That's so rare to see that.
Neither goalie, no matter how they divide this up, is going to be sitting there going, "I didn't get a chance to play much."
Yeah,
because they're both going to play.
They have. Was that seven? Is that right? Six Sunday games this year. That's got to be the most they've had in a
long
time, right?
They've had a lot of Mondays and Sundays, and there have been some weird nights.
Sunday games?
Yeah.
They have a lot of them.
I cannot remember six Sunday games in a season.
Once the football season ends, that's when the league starts playing more games on Sunday. There were quite a few games yesterday.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit different. Yesterday was Hockey Day in America, and they had the triple header on NBC, so a little bit different. But yes.
But NBC starts having national games every Sunday now, so that's you're going to see more of that. So the back-to-backs are a big part of it.
And I want to talk to you about USS. Don't forget, This Is What I Know, Zach Brown Band tickets on the line at 11:45. I want to talk about United Structural Systems, foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area here in Middle Tennessee since 1994, and they've got more than 18,000 satisfied residential customers. So if you're a homeowner, listen up. Maybe you've been outside and you've noticed some bricks cracking, or you've noticed walls bowing, or your doors or windows have been sticking when you try to open them. Drywall separating, stair step cracks in masonry mortar joints, a chimney that's tilting or leaning. Look, I can go on and on. There's a lot of signs that maybe something is going on with your house. And as a homeowner, that's scary, right? You want to get the experts out there. They are the experts. They believe in good quality of work, reputation, and integrity. That's all important to the folks at USS. They're locally owned, and they're licensed and insured. These are all things that should have you perk up as a homeowner if something like this is going on and you need to get the experts out to your place? Plus, they're going to give you a free estimate. They're going to come out and assess the situation and give you a free estimate. So if something like this is happening or you've noticed, call the folks at USS. 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275. You can always go to their website, usstn.com. They guarantee their best. Call USS. This is what I know in about 10 minutes. Great prize attached to it. So I'll ask you guys this. Is it as simple as they're just getting more of an opportunity? Their ice time has increased. Their role has increased. Is that how you explain away Granlin and Tourist look the best they've looked? Granlin looks the best he's looked since he's been here. Tourist had a really good start when he first got here, but everything in between has not been great, and he looks like he's back to that guy who first got here in the first, like, 20 games. So is it just simply they're getting more of an opportunity? What, how do you make that it's looked like this under John Hines?
Two different cases for me. I think Granlin, if you look at the secondary numbers, ice time would be a little different. I think he is definitely getting more ice time with John Hines. But his underlying numbers would suggest that he deserved better with goals. And it's not like right now he's got 14 goals and 9 assists or whatever it is. The puck's just starting to go in for him. He's getting rewarded for the hard work. I don't think you could ever question his work ethic, his defending. He does a lot of good things besides the offensive production. What makes him an elite player is he does all those things, and in the past he's had 60-point seasons consistently. We just haven't seen that
player.
Yeah, but
this is a production league. It's based on your production, not your hard work. And, hey, it's close, but no cigar. Now he's getting it. So why? Why is he getting the production? He's got 8 goals of his 14 under John Hines.
I mean, there's a lot of theories. Last year down the stretch, you know, he was moving his family. He had just become a dad. There was a lot of things that you just wonder whether or not that affected him. You'll never hear a hockey player use that as an excuse. I just think he was unlucky some early in the season, but he's definitely picked it up a notch. I think you could say, you know, it's hard to look beyond Bonino, Smith, and Grimaldi. They've been so good for so long, but you could argue that Granlin here in the last month or two has been their best all-around forward. He's doing so many great things out there. Tourist, definitely, he got, you know, we go back through it all, but he was just put to the side by Peter Laviolette for whatever reason. And he wasn't playing his game, and it became a thing, right? It just wasn't going to work itself out between those two, unfortunately. And he got a fresh start. And as John Hines said very emphatically yesterday, Chase, I think you were down there, and he said the same thing to me about a week before. He goes, I haven't just said I'm giving you the ice time. Right, he's given him an opportunity to earn the ice time. Kyle Turris has now earned the ice time
that
he's getting.
That's the key phrase there.
That's a big thing. I thought that was a really smart way of saying it for John Hines, because both are true. Right, he gave him a fresh start. He was going to give him an opportunity, but Kyle Turris has now seized the opportunity. He looks much more like the player that he has been in the past, and that's a great sign. If he can stick on the wing, there's now been 3 games where they have kept that group together with Duchesne and Tourist on the same line with Philip Forsberg. There's still other levels that I think this team can hit. That's the exciting part about this. They still haven't gotten Ryan Ellis back. Hopefully that will happen sometime here very soon. But you still look at Johansson and Duchesne and Tourist and Forsberg, like Arvidsson. There's guys that have another level. They're not all going to hit it, but if a couple of them hit it, that's, you're going to see more great things here, I think. They've still untapped ability. It's not like they've overachieved by any stretch to go here. You look at the other teams they're fighting for, I don't know if they can say that.
I think the thing with Kyle Turris is you hit the nail on the head. For whatever reason, there was a disconnect between Kyle Turris and Peter Laviolette. And now there's a new voice in the room that basically came in with no preconceived notions about anybody, not just Kyle Turris. That was important. So he comes in, and because, look, he coached in the East, so he wasn't that familiar with this team, and you know, he gets the job, walks in, and has to coach a game. So it's not like he really knew much about the roster. He comes in, everybody has a clean slate, and Kyle Turris has taken that opportunity. Mikhail Granlund, a little bit of the same thing, that he's taken that opportunity, but at the same time, I just think it took a lot longer with all of the transition with him than, you know, than it really maybe should have, or we thought it would, or whatever. But Turris has been the one that has really stood out, that he just seems like a completely different player. When you talk to him in the locker room, it's like the same guy that was here when he first got here. You can tell his confidence is back. He seems a lot happier. So I think he really likes the role that he has with this team and the relationship that he has with his head coach.
Granlund is getting about 2.5 minutes more ice time per game under John Hines than Peter Laviolette. Kyle Turris is getting about the same thing, about 2.5 minutes more ice time under John Hines than he was with Peter Laviolette.
A lot of it is on the penalty kill. They weren't on the penalty kill at all. And so that's probably on average, depending on how many penalties they have to kill on a particular night, that's where a lot of that time is coming.
Which means Matt Duchesne and Philip Forsberg and Johansson, those guys, their ice time has gone down under John Hines.
Forsberg and Johansson had been a part of penalty killing for a good while. I don't think they're on there nearly as much. They're not.
Forsberg
on there.
Is 2 minutes less ice time under Hines than Laviolette.
I think you have to look at a lot of that is penalty kill. I think you have to look at 5-on-5 is where you look at the other part of it. But this is part of it. Like, why would you not play Nick Bonino's line? That's where a lot of this ice time thing, where's the ice time for these guys? Why would you not play Nick Bonino's line?
But they've in reality, awesome. Though, their ice time has not changed. It has stayed pretty much right at the same amount of time with both coaches, which tells you it's mm-hmm. what we've said all year. They've been the most consistent line all year.
So get them out there. Right?
Right, yeah, but nothing's changed. I mean, that's what it was.
Right, but the change is on the special teams. What I'm telling you, the Forsberg and Johansson, more or less, have been taken off of the penalty kill. Turris and Granlund have been put on the penalty kill. That's where some of that time is coming. And then probably there is, you know, during the course of the game, 5-on-5, there's been those games where they have shortened the bench, right? Yeah. You're not getting it done tonight. I'm going to play the guys that are getting it done.
We'll come back and close out the second hour with This Is What I Know. Tell us what you know. We've got great tickets on the line, but you're going to have to bring it. 737-1025, your calls next.
Some things you just know.
I have to know.
Do you think everybody knows?
When you know, you just know. It's time to set the record straight. Join the fun on This Is What I Know with Darren, Donick, and Chase.
Yes, we want to know what you know. It's Twic time. A pair of tickets to see Zac Brown Band at Bridgestone Arena Saturday, April 25th. But you have to get in there and participate. 737-1025. 615-737-1025. This is what I know. It is becoming abundantly clear since the Super Bowl. George Kittle, the fine tight end for the 49ers, who we were told last offseason by C.J. Beathard, that he was living in Nashville. We were like, oh, wow, isn't that weird? George Kittle lives here? He is at Preds games. He is all in.
Saw him last night.
On the Preds. He was there last night. I saw his mom and dad there Thursday night versus the Islanders. His dad is on Trent Dilfer's staff at Lipscomb Academy as an offensive line coach. I think his dad was a left tackle when he played. The Kittles, man, are all in on the Preds. That's what I know.
This is what I know. Saturday night, I was at Bridgestone Arena for the Caleb Plant fight. It was my first ever boxing event, boxing match. It was really cool to check it out. But what I know is there were more fights in the crowd than there were in the actual ring. Because I almost walked into one.
Literally. Honestly, it's been my experience going to boxing matches, and I don't love about it. Be quite honest.
I am walking out onto the floor and literally had to stop. A security guard like grabbed me because I was about to walk into the middle of something. Because these two guys got into it and were bouncing everywhere. I'm like, what is going on? And then I saw several more out in the crowd.
This is an honest conversation. Thursday, we're waiting for the room, okay, to get the pregame interview. I was sitting there talking with some people, and one of them was Kayla Anderson from News 2, and she said, are you going to the fight on Saturday? And I said, no, my schedule's not going to allow me to do that, but I would also say this, I don't really have much of a desire to go because I've been fortunate enough to go to a couple big boxing matches in my lifetime. In fact, one of them I went to was at the FedEx Forum in Memphis. It was Winky Wright. It was back in the day. This was probably over a decade ago. And I said, what I have learned from going to big-time boxing matches is I literally had this conversation with her Thursday morning. I said, all I did was sit there and watch fights in the stands. I said, it's just not my cup of tea. It's not for me. I don't enjoy that atmosphere. Man, if you can't go to a sporting event without everybody fighting in the stands, I really don't have any interest in going. So I literally had that conversation with her on Thursday, and she was like, wow, really? Because I think she was there covering it Saturday.
Yeah.
And then you tell me that's exactly what you experienced your first time.
Yeah, and look, that stuff.
And by the way, I did not have that conversation with you. Me and you have not talked about this.
No, I mean, we haven't. And look, if that's what happens, okay. I had never been. I didn't know what to expect. And it was cool. Caleb Plant won. It was fun seeing the whole back and forth of a match. And, you know, I've obviously watched on TV, but it's different when you're there live. Lennox Lewis was doing the fight. That was pretty cool. But, yeah, I just that's something that stood out to me of the crowd. And, look, I'm a NASCAR fan. I've been to Talladega on the backstretch, so I've seen some stuff. But a boxing match, I mean, you know, it's just there's boxing matches in the crowd. That's what I know.
This is what I know. I mentioned this in the first hour of the show when we had the conversation. But take a look at the reaction of the Major League Baseball players about the Astros. It's a lot different than back in the steroid days where nobody really wanted to call anybody out. The Astros are just getting started in this whole process of getting through what has been done here. But it is really remarkable. Mike Trout, Cody Bellinger, go right down the list. Everybody has something to say, and they are not shy in what they're saying about the Astros. That says a lot.
Mike Trout was quoted as saying, if I hit the game-winning home run to get us to the World Series, you can take my shirt off.
Do you think the first game of the season, the regular season for them, that somebody's going to get beamed? And would you have a problem with it if they did?
No, I don't think that's – I think just what's going to happen to them on the road is going to be plenty.
The fans?
Yeah, it's going to be bad.
Let the fans handle it?
It's going to be really, really bad for them. And it'll take its toll. It may not at the beginning. They'll probably band together. I told this to some people when talking about it. My guess is they'll get off to a good start. First couple of months will be really good. They'll band together. They'll say, you know, hey, we're going to prove to everybody, and it's going to take its toll. It's going to wear on them. And as time goes throughout the course of a very, very, very long baseball season, mentally, it's going to be excruciating for them to go through. And I think it'll start taking its toll on them as the season goes along. 737-1025, that's just my opinion. We'll see if that plays out. Adam, get us started. What do you know?
Hey, buddy. All right, so this is what I know. The baddest man I've seen on TV in a long time, I saw this weekend, it was not Caleb Plant. It was the referee that got wiped out, hits his back, lays there for a second, pops right back up, and then drops the face-off puck, man.
That was pretty awesome.
What a bad man, dude. That is my career goal, is to be that guy. And nobody even really said anything about it. So, yeah, he's a monster. Give that man his props. That's what I want to be when I grow up.
He got some love on the NHL.
He did.
What do you call
on
it?
On the fly.
On the fly, yeah. The linesman.
Yeah.
That was awkward. I was really worried. Fortunately, he did not hit his head on the ice, but he went down in a collision with two players going right by him. Ryan Johansson, you could tell, felt really bad about it because he was the guy
Who was it for St. Louis?
I didn't see. It happened on the near boards, but boy, when he went toppling over, I was like, oh boy. Fortunately, he was all right. That was tough.
He's
a pretty tough guy, man. I was impressed by it.
Yep. Thank you, Adam.
Thanks, Adam. My dream hasn't changed. I just want to be a get-back coach. That's what I want to be.
Nothing wrong with that. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, you could do that. You just have to say, get back, and use your arms.
Well, I'd have to pull on the shirt, bring him back.
Porth would be a good get-back coach. Because when things go bad with the equipment, he just basically does get back. 737-1025. Nate.
I'm done.
Nate, what do you know?
This is what I know, fellas. The NHL Department of Player Safety's explanation of using a skate to kick someone being not malicious is just completely wrong.
Yeah, disappointed.
No matter the force, it's malicious to use a skate to separate yourself from another player. Elliot Friedman even said in the interview on Friday that players are wearing knives. So if using a sharp knife to get someone away from you is not malicious, I don't know what is.
I don't know if you guys saw
it. Thanks for the call. Seven games. Disappointed.
Evander Kane, of all people, who is not the guy that's probably going to have the best impact doing this, but he came out with a really strong objection to that whole player safety department and said, we got to do this different. We could use a third party involved. And he's actually gotten a lot of support. The punishment to Zach Kassian was puzzling to me. 7 games. And so I'm not going to disagree at all with Nate. That should have been more.
Weak sauce. Yeah. I thought it was weak.
Should have been well more than 10.
I thought it would be 10.
Should be more than 10.
I said 10 at a minimum.
If he, whether it's malicious or not, if you kick your skate and that skate connects 6 inches higher, you got a life.
So you need somebody's throat slashed before you.
That's
serious.
What I'm saying.
I mean,
you
come
cannot
on, really?
Do that. I was talking to Chris Mason and Hal Gill about this when the ruling went down. We were all having dinner on Valentine's Day, by the way. Had a nice Valentine's Day dinner with those two. And Lindsay was
isn't that cute.
I saw the pictures.
Five guys and Lindsay. So Lindsay was our, hanging out with five guys. But they said the same thing. They were like, it doesn't matter.
You guys went to five guys on Valentine's Day?
No, we didn't go to five guys. It was five guys.
Oh, five guys. Okay. I thought you guys were having burgers
Lindsay. No, we didn't. But now I've lost my train of thought. But this was their point. Every hockey player knows you cannot kick your skate. Every hockey player knows that. So that alone should get you 10 games.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with whether you connect with the guy or not.
I agree. I said with Elliot Friedman on Friday, I hope he gets double-digit games. 7, really disappointed. Ben, what do you know?
My guys, what's going on with you today? I hope you're feeling good.
We are. What's going on with you?
All right, my man. So there's 3 things that I know today, okay? I'm going to start with number 1. You guys are the best talk show during the day for sports, hands down, all day long in Middle Tennessee. And that's no BS. You guys bring it straight. You talk facts, and you speak the truth.
Oh,
the second
thanks.
Thing that I know.
That's a promo. Thank
is
you.
That is that Patriots fans, we do not care about all the hubbub and all the things that people say about the Patriots or cheaters, true Patriots fans. And I'm not talking about these mamby-pamby, bandwagon fans that just became a fan, when Tom Brady started winning rings. I'm talking about the guys that watched Hannah play before Bill Belichick came, when we suffered through it. Real Patriots fans, we don't care about all that other hubbub and the cheating. We won those rings. Everything else is just haters talking crap, okay? We don't care about that. But the third thing that I do know, as a true New England fan, okay, Red Sox, Patriots, Celtics, Bruins, those are all my teams. We are embarrassed about what happened with Alex Cora in that last World Series. And this whole thing that went down with the Astros, what I can tell you that I know is that it's going to be hell when the season starts again. Those guys are going to get beaned. There's nothing anybody's going to be able to do about it. You can tell the umps to check them. You can tell them not to do it, but it's going to happen because they're going to get their revenge. And I don't even know what's going to happen to the Red Sox because they haven't even started digging into my team. But even though that's always going to be my team, no matter what, I'm embarrassed by that World Series. I'm embarrassed by what Cora did. And if anybody on that staff knew about it, then they should be gone just like Cora. They should be punished. And I'll tell you what, as a fan, I wouldn't be mad if they stripped us of that title because we cheated. What they did was egregious. That's what I know.
Okay, man, you brought it, Ben. Some people hung up. Yeah. That's how good Ben was. People was hung good. Up like, oh, man, I'm pulling the ripcord. I can't beat that. Look, I just said it. Patriots fans, I've never heard the yeah, but. They don't. They don't say it. Patriots fans don't say it. So I get everything we talked about in the first hour. That's a prime example. Remember, in the moment, that from afar, it's easy. When you're in it, they don't care. Like you just said, they don't care. I've never met a Patriots fan. Yeah, we're awesome, but I know we've been caught. Spygate and Deflategate and this gate and that gate and all kinds of other gates that we don't even know about. They don't ever say that. Never. They're like, hey, we're the Patriots. We're a dynasty. That's how it works.
I'll give you one more. This is what I know on the way out. Food for thought. And I said this in early January. I think it was January 3rd I pointed this out. And the same is basically true now. This is from Joe Rexroad in The Athletic. The Predators' record right now is 29-22-7. 2016-17 team on the same day, on February 18th, 2017.
They were 29-22-7.
They were 27-22-8.
Uh-oh.
Their record wasn't as good.
They're
going to
win the cup now. They're going to win the cup now. Here we go.
Eight seed. They're going in as the eight
seed. They're going
in. That's what I know. They're going in as the eight seed.
I'd prefer the seventh seed. And
now,
final wild card spot.
Vegas to win the
Which
Pacific.
Team has more talent? Which team had more talent?
I mean, number one. You want them to be the number one seed in the West.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, which team has more talent? This year's team or the 2017 team?
I think we know the answer.
But I think what I've just the point is, it's not too late to make the run. Right? You guys kind of you had the dramatic pause, like we had some dead air for a few seconds when I was saying this stretch is coming up is going to really define it. Well, they've got a chance. Right, this is where they were in 2017.
Nobody's ever questioned them having a chance or that being over. No, at some point you have to see it.
Right?
Okay, you can't. I mean, all we've done is talk about it. So, once again, it's a results business.
Hey, was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
Germans?
Hell no!
Forget it. He's rolling.
He's on a roll. Let him
go. Forget it. He's rolling.
But we're seeing it now. That's the difference. We're seeing it now.
And we've seen it for three games.
Three games.
Let's now check back after the next three games.
Let's have this cut right.
And the next three games. Right.
All right. We'll come back. Head east. We'll go to Knoxville next.